Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, you're not paranoid. We are all being watched and recorded and tracked and listened to. We'll spend this hour with Washington Post tech columnist Jeffrey Fowler, whose investigative reporting discovered that thousands of smartphone apps get busy right about the time we drop off to sleep, accessing all kinds of personal data from our devices and sometimes selling it to third parties. We'll talk about who might be buying that information and why, about the reality that privacy policies are not necessarily a promise that companies will protect our data, and we'll talk about what we gain and sacrifice when we equip our homes, cars, and offices with computers we control by voice so that in order to work, they have to be listening all the time. Our conversation starts after a short break. I was astonished by TV reality shows where it seems like the subjects have stopped noticing the cameras. If I were being followed around 24/7 by a video crew, a crew that could take all that footage of me and edit it and market it however they saw fit, I wouldn't be able to relax. The thing is, most of us with cell phones in our pockets are being tracked pretty much all the time. And many apps that would seem to have no need for private data to operate are nevertheless programmed to harvest massive amounts of it from our phones without our knowledge. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. As my guest discovered, these data transfers tend to happen in the dead of night when most of us are asleep and our devices are plugged in. And privacy policies may be less about keeping your information secret than about indemnifying the companies that pull private data from your device and share it with third-party users who never promise to safeguard your secrets. Jeffrey A. Fowler is technology columnist for The Washington Post, and he's here to talk about the information we share with companies through our devices. Jeff, welcome to Think.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So I think all of us know that our phones might update overnight. What made you realize you needed to look into exactly what that entails?
You know, earlier this year at CES, the big tech event that's held every year in Las Vegas, Apple put up a billboard to sort of make fun of the rest of the tech industry. And it said, "What happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone." And I'm a tech columnist for The Washington Post, and that stuck with me. And a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, I wonder if that's really true. And I wonder what does stay on my phone and what leaves. So I decided to do an experiment, and I found a guy who used to work for the NSA, and now he runs a privacy company here in San Francisco with me. And I said, could you help me hook up my iPhone to some special software that might answer that question? And it turned out it wasn't terribly hard to do, and we hooked up my phone, and I set it before I went to bed at night. I set the software on, and then I woke up in the morning, and I peered behind the curtain, and what I saw kind of horrified me. There were, you know, it's a good dozen companies that I had never heard of that were receiving all kinds of intimate details about my life. They got my exact GPS coordinates. They got my phone number. They got my email. They got my name. They got a way to fingerprint my phone. Just sort of all these things that I had never intended to share with these companies. They were getting.
And the quantity of data, Jeff, was astonishing. It was 1.5 gigabytes in a month. Now, for those of us who don't think in gigabytes, like what is that in layman's terms? Like how many movies downloaded? Can you explain it in those terms?
Well, you can think of it like a basic data plan for your phone from AT&T. Mm-hmm. And the basic data plan you get is 3 gigabytes. So 1.5 would be half of it.
Wow.
Now, that figure would be the tally of the data that these trackers were taking up over both day and at night. Because while it certainly does happen at night, and we can talk about why it happens at night, it also happens during the day when you use these apps too. And so that would be the tally, you know, if we left it on the entire month.
So what kind of data can apps access besides whatever interaction we have with them? So in other words, it sounds like you're describing things that were taken from your phone by these apps, but not necessarily apps that you had given a lot of information to in the first place.
Yeah, this is an interesting gray zone because let's take an app that you might use all the time, maybe like DoorDash. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, that's the food delivery,
home delivery one. Exactly. So you download DoorDash and you install it on your phone and you open it because you think that you're gonna get home food delivered. But when you open it, what you don't realize is you're also allowing DoorDash's app to make connections with and send your information to 9 other companies. Now, what sorts of information might this involve? Some of it is just how you're using the app. They're kind of all but sort of screen recording what your finger touches and where you move around to try to figure out maybe ways to improve the app or to get you to spend more money or to leave a higher tip or whatever it is that their business goal might be. That's some of the information. Other information is things like your address, your phone number, your email address, which they might use for a variety of purposes, including maybe to figure out if there's fraud happening in the app. I noticed in the case of DoorDash, they were even collecting information about how much the phone was physically moving around, because there's a little sensor in it, you know, that's used to detect also your step count for the day. They were even sending that information out to a tracker, ostensibly to see if the phone was a real phone or a fake one that might be trying to make fake purchases. There's also things that are sort of a little more amorphous, but turn out to be really important. And these are kind of digital fingerprints for your phone. This is the way that marketing companies in particular figure out one phone versus another, and then collect all the different clues that they can gather about you, about the person who owns this phone, and maybe put it into a dossier of information about you, which they might use to target ads to you, or maybe even sell to others.
So somewhere the profile of Jeff Fowler's phone is different from the profile of Chris Boyd's phone, but someone can pay for that information and like deliberately send us ads that might cause us to buy?
Quite possibly. I mean, and the biggest players in that space, of course, are Google and Facebook, right? Yeah. This is the way ads work on Facebook. They are gathering all these clues from both how you use the social network and its sister services like, you know, Instagram and others, as well as things you do around the internet. And they add all of that to a dossier, a profile of you, and they then use that to target ads to you. In the case of DoorDash, in fact, every time you open the DoorDash app, Facebook's app is getting a ping that says, hey, you know, Chris is hungry again. So Facebook gets to add that to your profile.
Wow. Wow. And do they have to tell us that they're doing this, or do they tell us in those 40-page consent forms that we all just click on because we can't bear to read them?
Ah, there's the rub. So I looked through a lot of the privacy policies of the apps that I discovered were sending out my data to third parties, and I found a pretty wide range of things in there. In the case of apps like DoorDash, they did have a line that said, hey, we may work with third parties, but they didn't say what they were. And also, they on the question of whether those third parties were going to protect your data or what they were going to do with it, they sort of did a shruggy. They said, we're not responsible for what these other sites do. In another case, the Weather Channel's app, they actually did a fair amount more. They actually listed the names of the third-party trackers they were working with. So props to them for at least being transparent about it, even though you had to dig into the privacy policy to get that. And in at least one case, I found an app that had a privacy policy that said they would never share my personally identifiable information with third parties. But I found they were doing it anyway. So even though they had the privacy policy there, they were violating it. And that app was called Citizen, and it's a sort of an up-and-coming app for getting local police reports. It lets you know if, you know, there's police activity near your house, for example.
Wow. So I have to tell you, after I read this piece, I got really paranoid and deleted a lot of apps off my phone that I don't use much anyway. And I was wondering,
that is the right response.
I was wondering if it's possible that some of these, you know, there are these free little dumb apps that maybe have a game on them or something. Could those be developed strictly for the purposes of collecting this data from us?
That is entirely possible. There's a wide range of trackers that are used in apps. And as I was talking about, some are kind of innocuous. Some serve good purposes, like helping to deal with fraud. But others are there so that the app makers can make money. Basically, if apps can prove that they have eyeballs and people with valuable data, there are definitely companies in Silicon Valley, where I'm based, that will say, hey, give us your data and we'll give you money in exchange for it.
How much money is our data worth?
That is a really interesting question that is very hard to answer, because it's hard to know over time what the value of an individual piece of data is going to be or what the impact of it might be. For example, a couple of years ago, we didn't think twice about taking silly Facebook quizzes about our personality that we would share with our friends. We didn't think that information, A, had much value or or B, you know, would ever be used for anything else. But then, as we've since learned, that data got passed on to someone else. It got passed on to someone else, which ended up being used by Cambridge Analytica to target Americans with advertisements during the 2016 election. So it's really hard to put a finger on it. I've seen efforts by researchers before to sort of try to quantify, you know, at least for the immediate advertising industry, and it's never as much as you'd think. But if we were to take, for example, let's just take Facebook. If you were to divide its revenue by the average American user, it's about $80 a year for Facebook.
Hmm. Okay, so what kind of notice do we receive if apps have shared our information and that information has been breached? Will we be notified if one of these third-party sites has had some kind of security breach if they're not the ones that initially collected the data?
Absolutely not.
Huh.
You know, I suppose it might happen from time to time. We see companies say, oh, one of our vendors had a data breach, and they'll alert people about it. But, you know, in most of these cases, these app developers aren't even telling us that they're using third parties. So why would they go out of their way to tell us when one of those organizations gets breached? And on that issue, I think, and I'm really glad you brought it up, that's the core point here. We now know, you know, the other lesson from the headlines about technology over the last 2 years, we know it's not a question of whether sites and services will get breached, it's when. Because it's pretty much happening to everyone. So that's why my general rule is, let's have as few places as possible gather data about us. You know, more data, more problems. Let's just keep it to a minimum. And that's where I really hope sort of the lessons of the last couple of years are really going, and the legislation that folks like Congress are considering, and a lot of states as well. I really hope that's really the end point of it, that there should be a minimization of the amount of data that gets collected.
But wait a minute, because you just said that at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, Apple put up signs that said what happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone. I have an iPhone, so isn't Apple protecting all the data that's moving around on my apps?
You'd certainly think so, given the way that Apple targets it, you know, its marketing and the way it talks about stuff. And compared to others in the tech industry, Apple is often a little bit better. For example, its own apps, so things like the Photos app from Apple and its Maps app, they generally collect as little data as possible. I will credit Apple with that. They believe in this minimization idea when it comes to their own apps, and when they do have to send data up to their own servers to analyze it, they encrypt it as much as possible. So credit to Apple on that. But they've got this kind of blind spot when it comes to third-party apps, that they're sort of hands-off with, to a certain degree, with what these third-party trackers are doing. Obviously, I talked with Apple for when I did my reporting for the Post for my column, and I gave them a chance to respond. And their response left kind of a lot, you know, a lot to be wanted. But yesterday, a week after my story came out, Apple did do one thing which is interesting. Yesterday was their big annual developers conference, when they gather, you know, all the app makers together, and they talk about what's coming in their software for the year ahead. And they buried in the announcements, they didn't even say it on stage, but if you go in and look at the detailed statements they put out, they actually said that they are going to start banning third-party trackers in apps for children.
Huh.
So just the kids' apps now. So my question is, if they're acknowledging that it's a problem for kids, why isn't it also a problem for adults? But you know what? I'll take the baby step.
And what about Android, which is Google's phone platform? Are they similarly guilty of letting a lot of this stuff slide?
100%. And, you know, Google, of course, makes most of its money from advertising. So it has even less incentive to try to stop this kind of behavior. In the case of Google, actually, they won't even allow some software into their own app store for Android devices that could help block some of the tracking.
Hmm.
They've banned that software because one of their rules is that apps can't interfere with the ability of other apps to make money from advertising.
Jeffrey A. Fowler is technology columnist for The Washington Post. He recently wrote a piece about all of this, and we're talking this hour about how our devices and our apps are spying on us. You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. This hour, we're talking about how our devices and apps can spy on us without our knowledge with Jeffrey A. Fowler. He's technology columnist for The Washington Post. If you'd like to join us, you can call 800-933-5372, or you can find us on Twitter at KERATHINK. Jeff, one pretty egregious trader of data or trafficker in data was Yelp, which is that app that features user reviews on local businesses. What kind of activity did you find Yelp engaging in at night on your phone?
Yeah, Yelp was sort of the strangest behavior that I saw overnight, and it's a little bit of an exception to the conversation we've had so far. What I found is that basically every 5 minutes, Yelp was waking up and sending out a message to itself, actually not to a third party, but sending out a message to itself that included the IP address of my phone. And if you were, and it appeared to have been doing that for many months, and if you were to tally all that up, Yelp essentially had enough data to track my travels all over the U.S. Over that period of time. When I asked Yelp about this, they called it a bug. They said it was an error in their software and that it impacted about 1% of their users. But it really did speak to the bigger point, I think, which is we don't really know what's going on with behind the scenes with these apps. And in the case of Yelp, sending that much data that often was clearly having a negative impact on my phone's battery life.
Yeah.
Not to mention, of course, my data plan.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I'm one of those weirdos who is like always preparing for the zombie apocalypse. So I keep my phone plugged in when I'm not using it. But occasionally overnight, I haven't had it plugged in and the battery has just gone way down. Could it be about all this nocturnal activity on my phone?
It could be. So why do apps do this in the middle of the night? For a couple of reasons. One is that the app makers don't want to disturb your use of the app. So if they set it to happen behind the scenes at night, you're less likely to be using the app and have it get sluggish or slow down because they're busy doing other things. Also, overnight, most people do tend to keep it plugged in. And when it's plugged in, they think that also might be a signal that it's a safe time to send out information. Now, there are things you can do and settings you can adjust on an iPhone as well as on an Android phone to keep apps from running in the background when you're not using them, when they're not, you know, present and in front of your face. Unfortunately, those are all turned on by default, so you'd have to go in and manually, app by app, say you're not allowed to work in the background. You could do that. The thing to note, though, is every time you open up one of those apps and it's in the foreground, it can still communicate with all these third-party trackers. So they'll just have to store it all up and send it out during the day when you're using them.
Is there anything we can do to use these apps without having our data copied and shared with them?
I wish I had a simple answer to this, but I don't. It's really, and this is the reason why I'm raising this issue. It's really on Apple and Google to do a better job of setting the rules for their operating systems and do a better job of vetting the apps that they allow into their store to prevent this from happening. There's no easy answer, but there are some things you can do. So first of all, you mentioned this before. You said after reading my column, you went on your phone and deleted a lot of apps that were already
on there.
Got like
four apps left, yeah.
Great. I think that's a great plan. I mean, look, we should all be doing a privacy census on our phones, on our computers, on our lives, you know, maybe a couple of times a year. I did the same thing after my experiment. I had great joy going through and deleting all those apps that I saw were collecting and sending my data off to third parties, you know, that I hardly ever used. So yeah, start there. Delete things that you don't use. If they're not there, then they can't collect data about you. That's step one. Also, go into those privacy settings in the phone. I know they're sort of confusing and everybody could do a better job with them, including Apple. But one area in particular you'll notice is location privacy. Mm-hmm. Go in and look and see what apps you've allowed to collect your location. In some cases, you might have said you can collect my location at all times. And for those apps, they're able to send off your location to whoever they want to, whenever they want to, which is a really creepy thing to have. So I think in almost all cases, you should say no to allowing your location to be tracked. You know, if ever in doubt with a question that your phone or your computer asks you, just say no. If they really need it, you'll figure that out at some point later. That's a good place to start. Another place to go is, again, in those privacy settings on your iPhone, if you scroll down to the bottom, there's a little thing about advertising tracking. If you click on that, and again, this is not turned on by default, but you can go in and turn on a setting that says limit ad tracking. And if you do that, it will make it a little bit harder for some of these apps to identify your phone for marketing.
So you
said stop the behavior, but it makes it a little bit harder.
You said that some of this is on Apple and Google to sort of regulate the third-party apps that can be downloaded for their phones. Some people in the industry worry about giving these gigantic corporations even more control over their competitors.
That is a really good point. We can't let the end point of this be that Apple gets to be the privacy police of the internet and decide who is violating our privacy and who is not, because we know that Apple might use that to, you know, get rid of some competitors who might have different business models than them. That said, there has to be a middle ground. Actually, there's a senator who sent a letter today, this morning, to Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, and it partially in response to my column in The Post. And in this letter, the senator proposes, why don't we have a button on our phones, both Apple phones and, of course, Android ones, that says, do not track me. Hmm. That would make it against the law for apps to engage in this kind of behavior. And if there is, some penalty for doing it, if there's the force of law behind it, that's a really interesting approach.
Okay, before we let people think that we've frightened them enough, I want to talk about the rise of microphone-equipped computers. Lots of people love the convenience of Alexa and Google Assistant and Siri. And I think most people understand that they're supposed to be listening for a wake-up word and then responding to our commands. Is it possible that these companies could have a secret wake-up word that they don't tell us about?
I don't know if I would call it a secret wake-up word, but I can definitely tell you from firsthand experience that these microphones do wake up quite frequently on their own when you didn't intend to say the wake-up word. So as you can tell, I love doing these experiments with my data to figure out what kind of secret life it gets up to. So I did a similar experiment with the Alexa device in my house, the Echo. I've had it for almost 4 years. A lot of people don't realize this, but Amazon keeps recordings of everything Alexa hears you say. Anybody with one of these devices can go in their Alexa app or go on the Amazon website and listen to these recordings. Just most people don't bother. But I did, and I spent several days just listening to 4 years worth of recordings of my life made by Alexa. And in that, I found dozens and dozens of occasions when Alexa recorded what was happening in my home and nobody realized that it was happening. It would go off randomly when I was watching TV. For some reason, something about Downton Abbey really made it activate. It also went off when we were talking about medication in my house for some reason. It went off when a friend was there and was working on a business deal. She happened to be sitting on the couch on the phone near my Alexa device. So this stuff does activate even when it's not supposed to.
So Amazon allows you to go in and you can actually manually delete those recordings. Does that take it off their servers or just off our account?
That is supposed to take it off both our account and their servers, though you raise an interesting question. Is there some sort of extra loophole that they're playing with there? They say they want to hold on to this data as much as possible because it helps make their artificial intelligence smarter. I think that is not a good trade-off for us as consumers, and I think Amazon ought to give all of us the option to say, do not keep recordings of my house at all. But it does not offer that, even though its arch rival Google does offer that option. So in this case, Google is a little bit of a privacy leader compared to Amazon.
All right, I want to go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Anne is calling from Weatherford, Texas. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I noticed that a lot of these apps will offer your Facebook login, and I never use that for anything. Does that help this problem of data transmission, or does it just not make any difference? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks
for calling.
I love this question. This is exactly the kind of question I wish everybody was as smart as this listener. Yes, do not use the Facebook logins for apps. It basically gives Facebook permission to then collect all kinds of data about what you do inside that app. And actually, there's a new alternative to it. So yesterday, I mentioned Apple held its developers conference. One of the new features that came out with is a third option. So instead of just login with Facebook and login with Google, now there's going to be a login with Apple. If you make that choice when it comes in the next couple of months, there's a more privacy protecting way to create an account with one of these apps. Instead of giving that app your real name and your real email address, Apple will make up a fake one for you, basically a pseudonym that will automatically forward to your real email address if you want, but will prevent the app developer from knowing who you really are. And pseudonyms are we've known for many centuries are a great way to still have free speech, but protect who you are. That's what, Alexander Hamilton used to do when he wrote his document. So I think that that's a much better solution in the future.
Many of us have, 79,000 passwords now. And people have finally learned not to use like password or 1234, but they're hard to remember. And so we keep some of that information stored in our devices. Is that safe?
I recommend that everybody who is an active user of the internet, be it on your phone or on a computer, get a password manager. And this is a dedicated program that keeps track of all of your passwords across all of your devices and will automatically fill them in for you. So it'll also save you time. The problem with allowing your phone, your email addresses to be saved on each individual device is that it won't that password then won't be everywhere that you might need it, right? Because you need to log in sometimes on your phone, sometimes on your computer, sometimes on your work computer, on your iPad. So really the better strategy is to get one program that works across all those devices. The one that I often recommend to people is called Dashlane. There are other alternatives. They might cost you a little bit of money, a monthly subscription, but it is the best money you will spend because the number one way to stay safe on the internet is to not reuse passwords. This is how everybody gets in trouble. One site gets breached, they get your password, then they're going to take that password and they're going to try it on a bunch of other sites. And if you happen to use that same one, say on your banking account, all of a sudden they're into your account.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Carlos on the line in Dallas. You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Go ahead, Carlos.
Chris, how are you doing? And thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
My phone is on my computer. And when I'm finished, because I do a lot of my work on my computer, I delete the history and the cache folder. How effective is that to deter the marketing?
Thanks for
calling. Ads?
What do you know about that, Jeff?
Well, so when you say your phone is on your computer, do you mean it's in like a web browser?
No, I use Skype.
You use Skype.
Business.
Okay. Yeah, so most of the activity that I've been reporting on and we've been talking about here today involves apps that are on smartphones. But certainly your computer is a place where tracking and data brokers can be busy as well. I think the most important thing you can do to make sure that your computer is safe is, number one, to check it for malware. These are nasty programs that might get on your computer and gather who knows what kind of information to possibly sell. So, for example, there's a free program you can download called Malwarebytes, and you can download it. Works for Windows and works for Macs, and it'll check your computer to make sure you don't have any of that stuff on there. Beyond that, the other place that I think you should focus some attention is your web browser, because that is the original place that data companies and marketers were trying to track all of our activity. And not all web browsers are created equal. And in fact, today, the Firefox browser announced that they were coming out with essentially a new version that by default blocks some of these cookies and some of this tracking activity that we've been talking about within the web. And so I recommend that for people who are concerned about this.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Este is on the line now in Dallas. Hi, Este.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Jeff, I want to thank you for reporting and researching on this work. It's very important and critical. My question has to do with people who are listening to this talk today. For some people, they'll be very concerned and they'll immediately go and change privacy settings and delete apps, and other people might be apathetic about it. But there also might be a group of people who say, so what? What does this matter anyway? I have nothing to hide. What would you say to those people who have that kind of response?
This is the classic question about privacy, and I'm so glad you asked it because I think it's a really important one. You know, there is a set of people who might start to assume that, you know, there is no privacy anymore, and who cares? I think that's a really dangerous assumption to make, not only for us as individuals, but as a society. When you assume that you're being listened to all the time, you don't have the same freedom of speech. And I think freedom of speech is really important for a democracy to function in a healthy manner. So that's the number one way I answer that question, is that this is a freedom of speech issue. You can't say what you need to say if you think you're constantly being listened to. On a personal level, I think it's also useful just to sort of make people realize that information that in one kind of context might seem completely innocent, taken out of that context or shifted somehow or handed over to somebody new, looks very, very different. For example, nobody ever plans to become a victim of domestic abuse. However, it happens. It happens way too often in our society. And in almost all of those cases these days, the phone and the data on the phone becomes a way that the abuser exerts control over the person being abused. And for example, you know, your phone might have this Find My iPhone feature, where you can go into an app and see where in the world your phone happens to be. That sounds really convenient, and it is useful if you do lose your phone. However, if your abuser has access to that app, which they probably will have set up their phone to, they can track you wherever you are in the world. So a lot of, and I've spoken about this with a number of domestic abuse shelters, the first thing they do when they have a victim come in is say, turn off the phone, because it's being used to control you.
My guest is Jeffrey A. Fowler, technology columnist for The Washington Post. We're talking about how our devices and apps are spying on us and what we can do about that. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about how our devices and apps can spy on us and what we can do about that with Jeffrey A. Fowler, who is technology columnist for The Washington Post. If you'd like to join us, you can call 800-933-5372. So, Jeff, you spoke a moment ago about our potential for being victims of crime and how our devices might be used as instruments of control. Many, many years ago, when I was a reporter, I sometimes covered criminal cases in the courts, and I was always struck by the many ways that investigators had of sort of tracking someone's movements who was accused of a crime. It's occurred to me that, like, our thermostats that notice when we pass by and our doorbells that take videos of us and that sort of thing might really have implications for people who are trying to verify an alibi in one direction or another.
I think this is a great point, that the data that's being gathered about us, particularly around our homes, is going to be become part of the legal record about our lives and is going to show up in court cases more and more often. I know of at least two cases now where Alexa recordings have been brought up in court or tried to be brought up in court, in one case in a murder trial. But there's all these other things around our house that are collecting data about us, too. Now your smart thermostat and your light bulbs and your garage door. And all of that can also be used to sort of recreate where you were and when you were there and what was going on in your house, all of which is valuable data. So, you know, we've allowed corporations to collect that data. So the question is, how good of a job are they going to do in keeping that data private? Will they resist court orders that try to collect it, or will they just hand it over?
What has been the pattern so far?
In many cases, the biggest companies do resist. They've started putting out transparency reports that at least give the sort of total number of cases that of times they've been asked for data and how often they did hand it over. But I think we're just scratching the surface on that question. And remember, these are all global companies, and not every country has laws like the U.S. that even allow these companies to resist requests for data.
All right. Back to the phones now. Richard in Dallas has been waiting to make a comment. Hi, Richard.
Good afternoon, Chris. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Hey.
Hey, well, I was calling because I wanted to bring up, you know, something along the line of Jeffrey's little observation. I use Ancestry, the genealogy search place, a lot. And I have noticed that if you look in the lower left corner of the screen, it reloads frequently, and I see it sending data to all sorts of things like Facebook. And so I said, I'm going to find out what these are. So I started writing down the names of these websites and checking them out, and they were like 21 or so different websites, not on our data gathering sites. So, you know, that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, Chris, your listeners are very, very smart, and I love the kinds of questions and points that they're bringing up here today. I haven't personally tested the Ancestry website, but you raise this excellent point that there's this whole other really, really sensitive kind of data that we are now interacting with sometimes on a daily basis, and that is our genetics. That's our DNA. And there are companies that are very much involved in the business of collecting it and storing it. And we need to be asking really tough questions about, A, what they're doing to protect it, and B, what they're who else they're sharing it with. For example, a competitor to Ancestry.com, 23andMe, last year said that they were going to start working with a major pharmaceutical company to essentially turn the genetic data that we've all paid them $100 to gather about ourselves into medicines, into drugs. And it certainly feels like a little bit of a bait and switch on folks who might have, handed $100 to 23andMe to learn about their ancestry, to learn that now all of a sudden their DNA was going to be used to make billions of dollars for the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't necessarily bother me to think that there's research being done to help people, but it's frustrating when you think that there are profit motives here, and those companies would have had to collect that information by other means if it wasn't handed over by a company that we didn't initially think was going to do that to us.
That's right. They might have had to pay you for it. I mean, why shouldn't it's our data? Why shouldn't we profit from the potentially billions of dollars that are being made off of it? And I think that's a really key point in all of this. That is often forgotten in Silicon Valley and by these companies we're talking about. This is our data. It's yours and mine. And we should be in control of it. And so, we should profit from it.
So if I'm accused of a crime and I have DNA samples with Ancestry.com or 23andMe, can courts try to access, can the police try to access those samples to compare them with the samples taken from a crime scene?
I believe that has come up, and I'm trying to recall how it got resolved. But some of these companies, I'm sure, would say that they would resist court orders as much as they could. But, you know, there may come a point at which they do have to hand it over.
A lot of this, I think people recognize that there are some trade-offs when you get things for free. But we would like to know what we're signing up for. Has anyone talked about making laws to simply make it fully transparent when you first sign up for an app in language that regular people can read and understand what might happen with our data?
That sounds like a great idea. The devil is in the details, though. Last year, almost exactly a year ago, Europe put in place this thing called the GDPR. One of the requirements of it is that that websites and services have clearer privacy policies and also give you notice when they have trackers. That's why if you go to a lot of websites these days, they pop up a little thing on the top or bottom that says, "We use trackers. Are you okay with that?" That is because of this European law. I think it did have some impact and it did make companies have to be a bit more transparent. But the truth of the matter is most people still just click OK or definitely don't read those privacy policies, as you said, so they're not going to really notice. I think what it comes down to is the laws should probably go a step further and severely limit the amount of data that they can just collect by default in the first place, because we can't rely on people sort of spending the time. We're all busy, you know, spending the time trying to think through what all the implications of every website and app we use and all the data that they might collect.
All right. Back to the phones now. This time we have Lucas on the line in Denton. Hi, Lucas.
Hi there. My question is, what would y'all think of an agency from like a government or top tech leaders forming to better protect our internet privacy? Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, that's been proposed. Right now, basically, we just have the FTC, And it's the one that is currently investigating Facebook. And my colleagues in Washington have reported that that settlement that could come out of that could be the largest in history and measure in the billions of dollars. But the FTC is very limited in what it can do and how much even sort of technical staff it has to go after some of these violations. So there's definitely talk about maybe we need something stronger to look after the digital world.
Some people right now, especially with the household devices, might say, well, that's fine. I don't need something listening to me all the time. And there may be people that decide that forever, but I think the world keeps moving in this direction. So are there ways that we can find to use these devices that are in our environment, and sometimes in environments that we don't control, right, like stores and places like that, to protect our privacy?
Yeah, this is the toughest question of all. You know, these companies, the way that they've structured their behavior and their data collection so far, they've sort of given us a false choice. And the false choice is, hey, do you want the benefits of modernity? Do you want the benefits of a smartphone? The benefits of, you know, being able to, you know, talk to an artificial intelligence and call up any song you want? Well, if you want that, then you have to give up your privacy. Hmm. Those are that's the false choice they've given us. I don't believe that that's the world. That's not the way the world has to work. We can make other choices. It might mean that these companies make less money along the way, that they're not able to collect as much money, not able to collect as much data that they can then make money from. It might also mean that they have to start making products and services that they charge us money for instead of being free and, you know, monetized through our data. But we need to start getting in the marketplace different kinds of choices. And I will credit Apple, for as hard as I've been on them about this app tracking issue, they are trying to lead on this point and say that privacy is a selling point for its products, and that if you buy its products and use its apps, they may cost you more, but you can be guaranteed that your data is not being tracked in them.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We have an email here from Joan in Dallas who wants to know what happens if you tell an app it can use location services while you're using the app.
Exactly as it sounds, you might say that the first time you click allow while using the app, but you probably forget that you gave it that permission. And then a year later, every time you open that app, it can still gather your location information. And maybe what you really needed was to only have it identify what state you lived in the first time you used it, mm-hmm. but you've given it permission to continue to gather that data. And in fact, there's a change that's coming to the iPhone software later this year that you'll get a new option. So instead of just allow it while the app is open and allow it always, the new third option will be allow it just once. And I hope that becomes everybody's default. Allow it just once is much better.
All right. Next on the phone, we have Al in Dallas. Hello, Al.
Hey. How are you? First-time caller and long-time listener. A quick question. We hide our iPhone camera or our desktop or laptop. Is that a real threat? You know, the camera that nobody would watch us. Is that a real threat? And how is technically if it is?
Thanks for calling. Yeah, how should we worry about the cameras on our computers and other places that might be looking at us, Jeff?
Well, I definitely know people who put that piece of tape, that little sticker, over the camera on their laptop, because it is possible that, you know, malware or hackers could activate that camera without you knowing. It isn't super easy to do, but it is possible. And just as one data point, one person that I know who does such a thing with their laptop is Mark Zuckerberg.
So that tells you something about his level of trust and maybe his level of knowledge about what's out there.
Exactly.
All right. So we have a question here from Miles who says, do you think open source or alternative operating systems will become more popular? People are having to choose between Apple and Google, but maybe another safer OS could emerge and gain market share.
It's possible, but all the lines that we've seen so far indicate that people are getting pretty locked in to the ecosystems that they've, you know, their phone is in. That people aren't switching very often between you know, iOS and Android, or between Mac and Windows. So it seems like those battles may be mostly over, and now it's about making sure that those operating systems can be locked down.
what kind of information could all of our devices put together, all of our online interactions, collect about our whereabouts and our activities throughout any given day without us ever knowing it?
Well, it could be used to create a pretty good map of who you are and who you interact with and what you talk about and what you're interested in, where you go. Think about all the things that you would know if you just sort of sat on someone's shoulder and walked around with them all day long. You could learn an awful lot. You know, sometimes I hear from readers of the Washington Post that say, "Is my phone listening to me? Because I swear I just had a conversation about cough drops with somebody, and then I opened Facebook and I saw an ad for cough drops. Was it listening?" And the true answer there is actually scarier than what people think. The true answer is your phone has so much other data about you that it doesn't need to listen.
Wow.
It already knows that you're in a place and a time and a context where you might be interested in cough drops. So it didn't have to record you to know that.
So are you able to use all your devices without paranoia based on how much you know about what these things can collect on us?
So I'm a technology journalist, so it's my job to use all this stuff. And yes, I believe that the way that we deal with this is by being informed. We have conversations like this great one we've had over the last hour. You know, not everybody has as much time as I do to sort of study the details and dig into it. But I do share with readers of The Washington Post once a week the best of what I've been able to learn about what's going on and what we can do about it. So you just have to stay informed. And, you know, if you're going to bring a new piece of technology into your life, if you're going to bring a new app or a new gadget with a microphone or a new thermostat with a sensor in it, really understand what you're bringing into your house before you do that.
Jeffrey A. Fowler is technology columnist for The Washington Post. Jeff, it's been so interesting and informative. Thanks so much for making this time for us.
My pleasure.
You can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our handle is at KERA Think, and there's a Think podcast that you can subscribe to using any podcast app you're familiar with. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.